All right, welcome back to the Frogs of War, podcast. I am Marshall Weber. You're not.
I'm not.
I don't think you are.
Not yet.
Yeah, you might be mad at me after last week, after the Spurs and Thunder, and I'm not the best loser, but...
All is okay.
But, yeah, so that game's going on right now. But one thing we do can, or one thing we can agree on, is that yesterday, well... A little backstory. I was watching a little bit of the Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler film, Creed, for maybe the third time I've seen it.
It's good. I haven't seen it yet.
It's very good.
Really?
You need to see it, for sure. I can't believe you haven't.
I don't watch as many movies as I used to.
Yeah, I mean...
It makes me sad. I wish I watched more.
I saw it in theaters, and then I saw it when it got released on like digital video, whatever. Nobody like really plugs in a DVD anymore, but... And then, yeah, I just, you know, by coincidence, stuck it in yesterday. I think it's because I was thinking about, like, Black Panther and how, like, hyped I am for that. And, yeah.
Another one I need to see.
Well, yeah, it's not out. That doesn't come out until...
Well, no, I know.
Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Great film. Really fun. Probably a little long. Probably about
15... You know what you're getting into when you go to one of
those. 15, 20 minutes too long, but... I don't know. It got me hyped on Spider-Man and Black Panther, so... Pumped for that. And yeah, so I was watching Creed and I already had like the kind of, you know, juice going. And then you turn on the Rangers game and Odor is punching Jose Bautista right in the face.
Right in the jaw. I mean,
right in the jaw. Yeah, I showed that to somebody at a thing today. And yeah, they let out a very audible, just like, whatever. Oh, fuck. F-bomb. It was great. I mean, it's kind of redundant to say F-bomb, but they let out a big oh, fuck, right in the middle of public. And I was like, I know you don't watch baseball, but you got to appreciate this hit. And yeah, you show that hit. It's definitely the cleanest hit I've ever seen in sports, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, somebody was, I think, clean hit that is still, you know, not regarded as like... You know, like ugly. You know, like the Rudy Tomjanovich getting his face shattered. That was probably a cleaner.
Or like
hit.
The Woody Hayes thing.
Yeah, but those. You know, last night was for the most part the response from non-Blue Jays people is kind of like this is good. You know, this is just awesome baseball.
This is awesome for sure. And
Bautista took it like a man. He didn't go down.
Yeah, and credit him for not like going down and taking it, but. Learning how to take a punch, but man, I have no sympathy for like, I like Canada. I like Canada fine. If people from Montreal are cool. People from Vancouver are cool. You know, most people I've met from Toronto are all right, but like, I won't forget ACL 2015 when that bat flip happened. And even before then, these Blue Jays fans were already just right in everybody's ear. Like there were two of them versus like 20 like Ranger, if not more fans, you know, watching the game in the beer tent. And, you know, they were just running their mouth talking about how shitty Texas was. Not the team, by the way, the state. And they're like, not even Austin's that cool. It's just like, these guys were just like, I mean, they were just like transplants too. They weren't even like, they were kind of from, I don't know. I didn't really understand it. I thought maybe one of them was originally from Houston. Then he moved to Toronto as a young kid. I don't know. These guys sucked. I mean, so I take that with me. That's my personal narrative and reason why I hate Toronto. And their fans were throwing trash on the field. Like... During that game, the bat flip game. So to see Jose Bautista, you know, take one right in the face, fine with it.
It was, you know.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I'd be lying to say that if I didn't, like, absolutely, like, love it.
No, I'm like, I don't have any beef with Canada or Toronto. I've actually met some very nice people from Toronto. I'm sure plenty of people have. I know Canada's considered a nice people. But, you know, every fan base is going to have its shitty douchebag fans. But, you know, if you were a Rangers fan, last night was just kind of, you know, it was just everything that you wanted to do yourself. And Odor just rocked Bautista right in the jaw. It was at this point, by the time you're listening to this podcast, you've probably already seen it. In fact, I'd be shocked if you haven't, just because it's, you know, it went viral about as fast as something can go viral, but just go watch it again. I mean, I don't think he got the helmet. I think he cleared the helmet and just got him straight, like, in the cheek.
Oh, yeah. Odor's chain went all the way around, like, full yeah. swing. Like, he... And
I mean, that's,
he, like,
that is as clean of a punch as you will ever
if,
see.
If, I'm sure there's some type of, like, physics to it where if your chain goes around your neck and does a you know, a 360...
Sports science needs to get...
Sports science. I'm sure the sports science behind it, you know, leaves it to...
John Bridges.
A clean hit, right?
Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah... And that's probably, honestly, the only baseball I enjoyed this weekend, because losing two in Waco, honestly...
Losing one would have been bad.
Yeah, and if we would have gotten swept, I would have easily said this is the worst baseball series I've seen TCU play in about 5 years. I still like leaning towards that.
Yeah, especially just the timing of it, because this pretty much is the nail in the coffin on us getting a regional this year, which is a bummer, because... All in all, we had a very good season. They just sort of, you know, sometimes you just wonder if a team starts too hot. You know, I know that sounds stupid to say, but I've always been a big proponent of, you know, especially in a sport like baseball or basketball where you have time to make up and, you know, you have time to get some conference wins. You know, having some losses early in the season is a good thing in a lot of cases.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
TCU really rolled through their early schedule. You know, they just didn't have a lot of learning experiences. And so when they got into conference play and they dropped, you know, a couple series, you know, Oklahoma State and then Texas Tech a couple weekends later. And then, you know, obviously Texas early. It's just, if you're a young team and you start out hot and then you take a couple losses late in the season, it's just hard to come back from that.
Yeah, I think at this point they pretty much, they're going to make the postseason, but at this point they pretty much, they would have to win the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah.
In convincing fashion to...
Well, if they win the Big 12 tournament,
to get,
you know,
a regional.
Whether it's convincing or not.
They have enough goodwill.
Yeah, I think they would get a regional.
Yeah, right. They have enough goodwill to, I mean, yeah, definitely national seed, definitely out. But yeah, to get a regional, yeah, they would definitely have to win the conference tournament. And, you know, goodwill does, like, buy you a lot of things. And if you've been good at baseball for, you know, this whole decade, can win your conference tournament, have a, you know, that brand recognition.
A guy like Schlossnagel will get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, so, right, especially if it's, you know, if it's between us and, you know, I mean, it really depends on the school that's kind of like vying for that like 16th, 15th, 16th spot. But yeah, if they have to choose between that and some, you know, it's weird to say like small school, but, you know, a school that's not in the Big 12 who hasn't had 5 to 6 years of or longer than that, really. I just was talking about in this decade, but, you know, especially what we've done the last 2 years, but certainly... Again, certainly the decade definitely helps you out.
Yeah, and, you know, you hate to think this way, but it's just kind of the reality and the nature of college sports now is TCU is going to bring in a lot more revenue than most other places for, you know, a regional. You know, more people are going to tune into their games because they're Big 12, and like you said, they built a reputation as a good, you know, baseball power the last few years. You know, Lupton during playoffs, I mean... They pack the house, like, you know, as with the best of just about anybody in the country. I mean, obviously Texas is going to, you know, fit 15,000 or whatever, but they have, in, you know, like a minor league size stadium. But TCU, you know, they're good for, you know, 8,000 to 9,000 during playoff baseball. So, you know, we'll see. If we don't win the Big 12 tournament, none of that even matters anyway. But, you know, regardless of how this season turns out, it's, you know, it was always going to be a learning experience for these young guys, and they're going to come back. You know, I mean, pretty much this entire team, with the exception of, I think, Steinhagen and Barzilli, you know, and maybe a couple of relief pitchers, everybody else is back. So this is a team that's going to be good for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely a young team, and getting to a regional and getting to a super regional, I think, is likely and could very well happen. And you're getting to play in a super regional against a team like Florida or Miami, or just a team that has a little bit more experience, and getting kind of that, you know, I'm trying to think of a better word than like initiation, but kind of just, you know, breaking you in a bit and kind of getting that taste of what that level and that kind of atmosphere feels like. And for people like Josh Watson and Lucan Baker and,
Even Skaug is only Skaug, a sophomore.
Yeah. So having that is yeah. And so when Skaug comes back as a junior, and we're not trying to say they won't make a, you know, College World Series, because they very well could. But having that under your belt with the newer guys, and then also people like Skaug and Wanhanen having that experience they did as freshmen, and, you know, carrying that into next season and having College World Series experience, and, you know, what hopefully these guys, these newer kids will get, hopefully getting a super regional will really, yeah, like create like a really like badass baseball team. So,
yeah. I don't know. One way or another, I think baseball is kind of the program I worry least about out of...
Yeah.
You just know they are just going to, you know, they're consistent. They've been the most consistent. As good as football's been, you know, baseball didn't really have a learning curve when it moved to the Big 12. I mean, the first year, kind of, but then after that, what, they win the tournament their second year in the conference, and then they win the conference last year, and, you know... It's just, it's our most stable program, you know, with the exception of maybe like track or something like that. But, yeah. And now with the possible emergence of TCU basketball, it's good to be a frog right now, you know, in terms of athletics.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Right. I mean, we talked last week about Jamie Dixon, what he's doing, and, yeah, I mean, it's just really, really good time. Yeah. To be a TCU fan. So excited for that. Yeah. So we'll see what happens this week against Kansas State at home. No reason why they shouldn't win that series. They play better at home. And then you go into the Big 12 tournament. So, and like we said, it's kind of a must win. It's a must win if we want to, get a regional, I think. I mean, and I pretty much know actually. They really couldn't have even lost. They really had a sweep or, you know, maybe lose one, game in these last two series to really kind of get back in a regional talk and to really catapult themselves back into it. It's really going to take,
they probably have to win out at this point.
Right. Winning out,
take a sweep this weekend,
and carry that into the Big 12 tournament. But some of the regional matchups I've seen, you know, they're, you know, first like playing Michigan, I think, and, you know, it's definitely regionals they can get out of, but you definitely kind of want to play at home first, even if you don't get to play at home in a super regional. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So we'll see. You know, we've been saying, you know, a lot, haven't we?
It's kind of, yeah, it's kind of our calling card. So, yeah, we're fine. Anyway, so let's pivot. It has been a good time to be a TCU fan. It's a great time to be a TCU fan. And we were talking before we hit the record button about kind of the, right now, like the preseason, like post spring kind of rankings are coming out. Kind of, I mean, there's 100 of them. There'll be like a summer ranking, and then there'll be like a preseason ranking, right? So, I mean, there'll be probably like two more before we even take a live snap in football, but... I've seen as high in Stuart Mandel's Fox Sports, I'm trying to think what it was, just Stuart Mandel's top 25, and he has as high as 6. And, I, you know, his reason behind that is, you know, A, what Patterson was able to do with the defense last year and all the talent coming back and, you know, a healthier, you know, Ranthony Tejada and just... pretty much everywhere, just a healthier, and, you know, you take into consideration all the JUCO guys coming in, like Matt Boson, and, yeah, you have just a healthier, deeper Gary Patterson defense, and that's obviously going to do a lot of amazing things. So, what else, I mean, what have you seen that you've liked from the, or anything of interest from these kind of...
Well, I guess of interest is just that the ranking is all over the place. I mean,
right? Yeah, I've seen 22. I've seen 6. I've seen in the 20s. Dropped out. Yeah,
freaking. So ESPN is obviously the worst sports outlet available.
Well, Mark Schlabel also needs to put down like the widespread panic bootlegs and like I don't know. They say there's no country for old men, but that dude has kind of had his like head up his ass the last like 3 years.
I
don't mean that. Like,
I mean, no, I know what you mean. I mean, they're just...
It seems like he just like mails it in from now on. Like if you haven't been fired from ESPN yet, like there's a reason why people our age like aren't paying attention to that network. There's a reason why like we're cutting the cord. Like there's nobody there that's fucking interesting right now.
I pay way closer. They have SVP.
I don't pay attention to really Fox either, but yeah, I mean they have SVP. That's it. Like cool.
And he has like a nice show, but he's stuck with
the biggest like
yeah
Jamoke. Danny Cannell. It's just not interesting. I don't think Mark Slaybaugh is interesting. I think the bloggers do really well. Like I think Jake Trotter does really well. Brandon Chapman, Max Olson do really well with the Big 12 stuff. Obviously, like I love David Ubben, who's not at ESPN, but and I like you know I don't read the SEC stuff that much as much, but Sam Kahn, who does mostly A&M and other Big 12 stuff, is really good. But yeah, when you get and Ivan Maisel's okay, but I don't know. I just think the more you get in, I just think they like I mail it in. Like I mean, I just think it's kind of just lazy half the time. Yeah. I mean, no, I agree that Alabama is the best team in the country, but is that really like come on, 12-year-old could tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, and just to speak to how much it seems like they, you know, phone it in, and there's just I don't know.
Yeah, I guess mailing's a little out of date.
Yeah, they email it in.
It's like the John Mulaney thing where he's like, I was on the telephone with Blockbuster Video. It's like that's a very old fashioned sentence when you think about it.
Yeah, it's sad. But no, so just to show you how unconnected ESPN is just from each other, you had an article come out today about how TCU is probably the Big 12 sleeper pick to go to the
college playoffs. Yeah, yeah.
Then you have a different writer talking about how TCU is not even, you know, top 25 caliber to start the season. And
it's weird that the Big 12, like the bloggers, the guys that like only pay attention to the Big 12, like get it right. Get that stuff usually right, right?
Yeah.
And some national guys just like, oh, well, you know, this team, they're losing their quarterback and Josh Jackson, so they're going to suck.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying like this team's like, I don't think this team's like, I wouldn't put this team at number six right now, like Stuart Mandel. Like,
no, they have the potential. Certainly, there's the talent is there,
and that's the thing you never know. Is this like where you think they'll end up? Like, is this like their ceiling? Is this like if they all played football right now? Like, it's all arbitrary. It's all like you know just subjective. But
yeah,
so I'm happy. Like, I mean, whatever. Like, I'm not saying everybody has to like love TCU, and I'm not like that mad about Schlayball. Like, I don't really like honestly care that much because the only thing that matters is your ranking on January 15th or whatever when you know all the games are done. But I don't know. I don't know. In a network like ESPN, you should expect a little bit more nuance or I don't know whatever from a national writer, somebody just you know.
A little synergy, ESPN.
A little synergy, but yeah, I mean. Let's see what else. Yeah, so to pivot off that, like I mean, this is obviously like a team that. It's exciting and it's like just like bittersweet because you obviously like hate to see guys like Doxson like leave and you know go on to do great things, get drafted by the you know sucks it's the Redskins but or Washington but you know in Boykin to basically be the number two guy in Seattle, which is really awesome, I
love that,
which is really really cool.
That's such a perfect situation for him.
But and that's the cool thing about and the interesting thing about college football and college athletics is that you don't really get these guys for very long. So the identity of teams change. I mean, yes, there is carryover. I mean, guys like Kyle Hicks, Trevor Johnson, you know, you're always going to leave some behind, but, you know, it's not like they graduate everybody and start, like, reset. But, you know, just the way things, you know, and Aaron Green, too, leaving, you know, I don't want to leave him out, but Derek Kindred, whoever you want to name, it's just, you know, guys leave. And the cool thing and the scary thing, I guess, you know, it's scary, but it's also, like, awesome and cool that you kind of get a fresh start for better or worse or yeah. I mean not even for worse, I just mean like in terms of TCU like ended great last season, like you know that Alamo Bowl was like terrific, you know the Peach Bowl was like one of the best like experiences I've ever had watching a game on television in my life, so but getting a reset and kind of getting a fresh start is pretty awesome because as much as you miss Boykin, as much as you miss Doxson, part of like being a college football fan is like watching these guys sort of like pass the torch, you know, just like Maz Kanata giving the lightsaber to Ray, just passing it down to like a new generation and a new crop of kids to kind of like take over like something you like really like value and love. So yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, to to discount TCU just because they have a new crop of players, you know, certainly fair. But if you look just at college football as a whole and the teams that are successful, you know, year in and year out, Alabama has, you know, they have a new starting quarterback every year, it seems like. You know, teams like LSU and, you know, Michigan historically and Michigan State and, you know, now and some of the teams out west, like USC historically, like they don't have the same guy for like 4 years a lot of times. They're putting, you know, a quarterback will come in for a year or two and then it's on to the next one. A receiver will have, you know, one or two breakout years and it's on to the next one.
Yeah, it's just very rare guy.
Kind of the common denominator with all that is, you know, good coaches make a difference in college football more than they do at, you know, the pro level.
Sure.
It's backwards really, where in the pro level, it's like if you have a franchise player, you might not have the same coach the entire time, but you're going to be okay because you have the franchise player. In college, you know you're not going to have the same player, but if you have the franchise coach, you're going to be fine.
Right.
So, you know, and Gary Patterson has earned clearly a lot of national respect. He was ranked as the, you know, number three coach going into this season.
Yeah, and he was listed like the number three coach by CBS or USA Today, one of the two.
Yeah,
when they do their end of the year, and yeah, a lot goes into that, and a lot is to be said about that. So
yeah, as long as Gary's there, I guess the point is, as long as Gary is there, TCU is going to have a chance to win with no matter who they put out on the field.
Right.
Now it just happens to be that the players that we are signing now and, you know, developing are like stud athletes. And so if, you know, when we get years like the past 2 years where everybody's on the same page and everybody's buying into, you know, the philosophies and the offense and defensive schemes and all that, you know, good, you know, the athletes are good enough that if they're buying in, the team is going to be really, really good. And that's kind of what I see coming up, you know, this year. So,
right. And speaking of good, you know, let's talk about the post-spring depth chart. I don't know if you have it up, but like off the top of your head, is there anything that like excites you? Is there anything that you're worried about? Is there anything that like a hidden theory that, you know, you feel like this guy's going to break out and just like bust heads?
Well, you see the first, I don't have it up in front of me, but I you know, pretty well remember it. You see a lot of Orrs.
Yeah.
Orrs, not the player.
Yeah. Not but, Nick Orr.
Yeah. But
Orr,
rather
yeah, sure.
Like the word Orr at a lot of positions, meaning, you know, Sean Nixon or Kyle Hicks as the starter. Although I think Patterson has since said that Hicks is, you know, realistically the guy.
And Sean Nixon doesn't really like, I mean, he plays running back, but he's kind of more of like a slot back.
He's our Percy Harvin. He's going to be all over the field. But the one that really, you know, stood out to me and surprised me was Jalen Austin is coming out of spring, got the nod over what Taj Williams and
Emmanuel Porter.
Yeah. So,
The smallest guy in the bunch. Taj Williams is a little skinnier, but yeah, I mean, Jalen Austin had an awesome season last year playing in the that Z role that Doxson played. So taking over that side of the football is obviously like big shoes to fill. I don't even mean metaphorically. I don't know what size shoe Josh Doxson wore, but it's
like probably a 12 to 14, I would assume.
Right. Sorry, I didn't mean it literally. I mean it, you know, metaphorically, obviously. But I mean that's definitely, and there's not even an or there. So him being ahead of Austin and Taj Williams and Emmanuel Porter being three behind those two guys, that like says a lot. And obviously they're gonna shuffle around a lot. And one of the
Every receiver is going to see the field.
Right.
I mean that's the way the offense works.
I mean, but even look at the Y, you know, with Ty Salina, Jarison Stewart, John DeArce, like it's gangbusters.
All
like,
three of those guys could start.
All three of those guys could start. And then you know you have the X, where Colby Listenby played, a guy that's 5'10". There's not even Deontay Gray is not 5'10". Deontay Gray is probably 5'8", 5'9".
Yeah.
And so him moving from where, you know. Sorry, Kevontae Turpin's playing. You know, that used to be Deontay Gray's role. So with Kevontae Turpin,
that also shows you how big of a stud Turpin is.
Exactly.
Like he just unseated a senior.
Exactly. With he basically made his had to like make somebody move a position, right? So instead of playing Deontay Gray fighting out Desmond White for time, you know, they moved him with Isaiah Graham out to the X where Colby Listenby plays. So a guy that's going to be your burner, a guy that's probably going to mostly just like run verticals or pseudo verticals, which is perfect for Gray because he's so fast. Just
bubble and screens and verticals, Corey Coleman.
So I'm really, really excited for that. I'm actually really, really hyped for that. I'm really hyped for the whole receiving core, really, because there's so many different things and so many different ways you could play around with it. I mean, like game theory for days. I mean, there's so many different combinations and intricate, interesting things you could do with it. And I think moving in the post, like Boykin and Doxson Air, like the first thing that's really going to jump out is like how much, presumably, Kenny Hill is going to, and Doug Meacham and Sonny Cumbie are going to have to just kind of, like a 2.0 of kind of the offense we've seen the last 2 years in some ways, but also they're just going to open up the playbook. And I think just like I was saying earlier, just really intricate and really interesting ways and not relying just on Josh Doxson to catch like everything that's thrown to him, which like he pretty much did. And yeah, they're going to spread it around more and just really give this depth at receiver just a lot, you know, a lot to play with. Everybody's going to get a touch on a ball this year and everybody's going to get their chance to make a big play. It's not going to rely on one playmaker. I mean, that playmaker will come to, you know, probably be Turpin, but you know, there's another, you know, but yeah, it's not going to just be like Doxson heavy, right? Yeah. There's probably not going to be, you know, it's not going to be just Jalen Austin. It's not going to be just Ty Salinia.
You're not going to see many double-digit catches
right.
from, you know, a receiver in right. a game. You know, and somebody will break out at some point.
Exactly. But somebody's going to have like a, you know, 12-catch, you know.
You're going to see lots
180-yard game or whatever. But
lots of everybody has anywhere from 3 to 6 catches.
And being able to shuffle those guys in and out and being able to, you never know who's going to get the ball thrown to really makes an interesting and dynamic offense because, you know, last year, like, Doxson would be double-teamed and they'd work around that, but...
Or he'd still make the catch anyway. He'd
still make the catch, but you don't know really with this receiving core for this year, like... I mean, it could be anybody, and that's what makes it... I think, in some ways, it's going to make it harder to defend, right? I mean, it's not going to... You're not going to have a playmaker like Doxson come out immediately or ever, but... And that's, you know, no shot on anybody playing. It's just you're never going to have a player that is Josh Doxson. You can have a player that's just as good that may get drafted as high or higher, but you're never going to have, like, Josh Doxson.
He's the OG.
So, right. And everybody's going to compare every TCU receiver to him for, like, the rest of the time. So, which deservingly so. So, yeah, I'm really excited for the receiving core. I'm always excited for the receiving core. But this year in particular, I'm really excited because... It's a weird mix of like you know what you're getting, but at the same time you don't. Like you know these kids, but you also haven't seen it like under this sort of direction, and that's what I'm really excited for. But I don't know. Is there anything on defense that stands out to you?
I mean,
or anywhere else?
Just the depth. I mean, honestly, each defensive position goes, you know, 2 or 3 deep at right. least. And I know Gary will be, you know, quick to say that cornerback we need more depth, and I think D line we're a little thin, but. You know, D-line, we're getting some help from the incoming freshmen. There's 3 or 4 guys who can play right away. And then cornerback, I'd say that's true just because I don't think you can ever have enough good cornerbacks. I think that's honestly the most important position on the defensive side of the ball, especially in the Big 12. If you have good cornerbacks, you can take away the receivers. And then suddenly the rest of the defense, their job is a lot easier at that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, having Tejada, assuming he's even close to full strength, you know, 90% Tejada is still a very good cornerback. And Gladney, you know, there's been a lot of hype around Jeff Gladney so far this offseason. And anytime Gary gets excited about a defensive player, well, that's, you know, look out because that kid's probably
got...
Yeah, I mean,
some are saying, like, I mean, they won't have, Julius Lewis... more than likely, but you could have a conspiracy theory to where it's not even like a conspiracy theory, but I mean, this defense has the opportunity, I think, to be like really great. And it always sucks. You just don't know ever when like the best Gary Patterson defense is ever going to come. Nobody really thought that like Paul Dawson was going to be like an All-American and lead that defense to like the greatest, which I think the most like aggressive, the most, just nuanced and intelligent unit that Gary Patterson ever put out. And that was a year removed from arguably the greatest defensive player in TCU's history, Jason Verrett, you know, getting drafted by the Chargers. So you never know. You never know where you're going to get. I mean, this could very well be the most, you know, aggressive and interesting and just all-around best defense that Patterson's ever put out. I mean, it's certainly, like, the depth, I think, might be there. So
the one, yeah, the one common denominator that every really good Gary defense, you know, has, and there's been a lot of them, obviously, but the one thing that stands out to me is always if you have a bunch of returning starters, then they're not only familiar with the system, but they're familiar with each other. You know, they've been in the system for a while and just understand, you know, it's an intricate defense. It's hard to, I mean, it's hard to coach against. It's hard to learn. It's, you know, it's just different than right. defenses that guys are used to playing. And so especially for the young guys who got, actual meaningful game experience last year, their second year is going to seem like a walk in the park. And then pour in a bunch of upperclassmen who are coming back from injury on top of that. It's just terrifying how deep these guys are going to be. Maybe there's not going to be necessarily one star, which there will be. I really think our linebacking core is going to produce somebody this year.
Yeah, I mean, start up the Mike Freeze rumors again.
Which... Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. Mike Freeze, who was our starter last year, rumor is that he's back at TCU, and who knows? Maybe he's just a student, or maybe he's not even there. But if he is there and he's on the team, he could legitimately be looking at third string next year. And that just goes to show how much depth we have at linebacker now. The two guys who were penciled in, actually, that was one thing that did surprise me, that Wilson is penciled in as a starter over Douglas and what's his name?
Summers,
yeah.
I mean, Wilson's great. I mean, like, a Wilson-Traven Howard, like, combo is, like, just, I don't know, like, let's start the season tomorrow. Like, I'm like, ready.
See, the issue with that is, to me, they're kind of the same player, which is not a bad thing necessarily, but I think you need a bigger guy.
Well, he's also, like, you have to understand, also these, or not you, but I just mean, like, everybody, like, we all have to, like, realize, and, like, you look at depth charts, you're like, oh, this guy's better than that guy, but it really, like, has a lot to do with, like, what plays are being run by the other team, and, like, what, like, certain, like, it really depends on the matchups. Like, you know, Traven's played, you know, inside a lot to, like, you know, negate passing plays or whatever. Like, our friend Ian Boyd, if you don't follow him, like, search for him on Twitter. There's, like, some underscores in his name. It's, like, Ian_A_Boyd. You know, he makes a lot of good points. I mean, he always does. He's, like, one of the, I think, the smartest writers out there when it comes to scheme and that kind of almost like chess game. These teams, certainly the Big 12 and from a broader scope, play with each other. But and what he does, I mean, that's his specialty. He's not, like, writing, like, think pieces about like, the media influence on the Big 12 and, like, where the grant of rights and all that. But, you know, he made a point about, like, how teams like Missouri, Kansas State, Iowa, TCU are always, like, able to find, like, great pass rushing defensive ends. So you get newer guys like Matt Boson in there, you know, a Caraway, if you will, on the other side at the right end, and really the depth with Boson and McFarland. Like, it's just, these guys are just very, very athletic, and these guys are very, very, you know, obviously well coached, and just when you mix that in with a linebacking core who Gary Patterson was a linebacker, I guess, but you know, that, you know, is more or less a specialty. So having a linebacking core that probably, this is the linebacking core people were like, once you take in Summers and Sammy Douglas and you want to throw Mike Freeze in there, like, this is probably the most excited I feel like people have been for a linebacking core at TCU in maybe like 10 years.
Yeah, they're six.
I mean, no shots against Kenny Kane. I love Kenny Kane, but I mean, the four guys on this depth chart I'm looking at, Montrell Wilson, Ty Summers, Traven Howard, Sammy Douglas, like, that's pretty good.
And then you have Tyree Horton coming in.
Right.
Especially now, if the rumors are true and Freeze is back, that's right. A six deep linebacking core.
Totally.
That's ridiculous. I mean, there are colleges that don't have one linebacker that right. You know, they would feel comfortable putting out there.
And you got Denzel in the safety, in the strong safety, which he is just an unappreciated hero.
There's your seventh linebacker right there.
Exactly. And then, you know, Gladney, Deshaun Raymond, Steve Wesley, Ranthony Tejada and Tony James is your cornerbacks. And you got yourself a pretty, and obviously your weak, your other safeties or Ioka and then some other kid named Michael Downing. But,
well, Markel Simmons.
Markel too. Simmons, right. Yeah. So.
Isahaku.
Isahaku. And I guess what we're trying to like pivot around and really get to saying is that, like, you know, knock on wood that, you know, it stays healthy and everything. But when you have a Gary Patterson defense that is this deep and hopefully this healthy, like, it just makes up for whatever, like, growing pains, you know, a Kenny Hill offense or Foster Sawyer offense may inherit.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe there's not. Maybe they don't take a step back. Maybe they just pick up right where they left off. And this is what these spread offenses are designed to do, right? This is why, you know, arguably, like, schools like Texas, like, had trouble when Colt McCoy left because he didn't really have an offensive identity. And when you lose a player like Colt McCoy or whoever you ever want to throw in there and you don't really have an offensive identity, then, you know, you kind of go to shit in a lot of ways. But, and this is a big test for Meacham and Cumbie too. It's like, all right, well, if you can produce these similar results and certainly better results with people not named Trevon Boykin, not named Josh Doxson, like, you know, you're the real deal.
But you can also argue that they made Boykin and Doxson into Boykin and Doxson.
That's true. I mean, yeah, for sure. But, you know, you have to have the other, you know, to really make that example, to really like prove that, you really have to go out and...
No, and I mean, yeah, I'm just, I guess, arguing for the sake of arguing. I think we're on the same page here. You should.
But yeah.
The whole team has a lot to prove, and I think that's why we're so excited about it.
I mean, Trevon Boykin, yeah, clearly learned a lot from Sonny Cumbie and the designs. It's just like, I think, and everybody else thinks, and kind of knows that this offense is not really going to take a step back in some ways, but... You know, maybe like if there's 13 seconds left or whatever in Manhattan, like maybe they don't get the same kind of result as they did last year without guys like Boykin or Doxson. But, you know, schematically and what you're going to see pretty much week to week should be the same numbers wise. And that is exciting. And then you, again, flip it to what we were just talking about on defense with depth and just kind of just health.
Just experience. I mean,
and experience too, yeah.
Literally, you can go down the line, and because we had to start so many people last year, just about every single player on the 2-deep depth chart started at one point. And so, I mean, now all of them are not maybe starter ready or starter capable right now, but the fact is you have guys who have played a ton. And so, like Marshall was saying, if there is any kind of drop-off on offense, we can rely on, you know, a more vintage Gary Patterson defense to pick us up.
Right.
But then we don't have to worry about, like, a 2013 where the offense is so inept and so bad.
Yeah, you're not losing games, you know, by, like, 3 or 7, you know. At least the offense will have some sort of identity to where, at the very worst, you get out next year with 7 or 8 wins, right? You're not winning 4, you're winning. You're making those close games, like, you know, irrelevant because you have an offense that could not get
more than 15 points, not get 20
yards against Oklahoma and a half, right?
Yeah. So I'd say probably 7 or 8 wins is worst case scenario next year. And whereas best case scenario is probably leaning a little bit more towards Stuart Mandel and, you know, top 10. So,
yeah, I always
we'll see.
I'm always optimistic.
I guess at the end of the season, we will just...
I'm just excited for the season. See who takes the throne. And we get a whole summer of this talk. And there'll always be something exciting to come in the summer. And, you know, stay tuned because some of the stories will come up and we'll have people on here to talk. And as much as I love baseball and, you know, I assume I will like college basketball a lot more in the coming years, it doesn't get better than college football.
Especially Bolden tomorrow.
Yeah. But it just doesn't get better than college football for me. Or I think most people in the South and Texas and, I don't know, maybe even out West when you get to USC, UCLA, Oregon. I mean, I feel like the
UCLA,
only...
UCLA, I have a hunch they care a little bit more about basketball.
I don't think so, though. I mean, they're not that good in basketball anymore. It's not
but I mean, it's
John
still...
Wooden's not there anymore. It's not like fucking 1968.
Yeah,
like,
but I'm just saying the...
Bill Walton's not protesting the Vietnam War, and
I think Bill Walton is still protesting the Vietnam War somewhere.
Oh yeah, he protests the Vietnam War every night. He does the thing like Apocalypse Now dance every night. Puts on the Doors, The End, and just smokes some peyote, and you know, I don't know. Do you really think, though, that UCLA fans care? I just feel like the last time UCLA fans cared more about basketball is when, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was Lou Alcindor.
Well, I don't know. When they had Westbrook and Kevin Love and...
Still, but I mean, that's...
wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, but USC's had, like, really good players and...
But they don't have nearly the tradition UCLA does.
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody does. I mean, no men's program.
Yeah, but football is... Even out West, they have a good... They have a rich... Like,
when's the last time they won anything in football? I mean, even I don't think they even played in like a BCS bowl or anything.
Yeah, maybe I guess you're right. You're probably right. I just don't know, man. Then again, like when's yeah, it's just very hard for me to imagine schools not named like Duke or UNC or like Wake Forest. Basically, any school in like North Carolina like care about basketball or baseball more than they do college football. I mean, what other schools do you think care about basketball or something else more than football? Schools in North Carolina, Midwest UCLA. Midwest schools,
Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana, Purdue Kansas, does. Purdue. Yeah.
Michigan State's probably on the fence.
I don't know, dude. Michigan State. Yeah, I don't know. You're probably right. I mean, both of those coaches and those schools. I think, dude, those guys just love anything. Give them a keg or... case of beer, do whatever, man. Those guys will show up and just be like loud.
A blanket or something.
Yeah, no, I like Michigan State. I like their fans are very passionate and very much, yeah, very very admirable for, and it helps you have Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio. So, yeah, big fan of their admiration for their own school. I don't know. Do you have anything more to say about the depth chart or?
Well, UCLA this isn't depth chart related, but it is UCLA related.
Sure.
You know, it'll be a fun miniseries. I don't even know if a miniseries, but like a webcast or something.
Go for it.
Just put Gary Busey and Bill Walton in a room.
Yeah.
I'd probably watch that.
I honestly just want to watch just like Bill Walton, just periscope him, just hitting the bong and just see what comes. You know, just like
the gas mask.
Just exactly. Probably. What if it was? What if he like took the picture of Tunsil?
Yeah. What if Tunsil? He was holding the camera.
Larry, Larry, got to put on this. Got to take this picture, man. You look like Darth Vader or something. It's like my son. He's gonna be the coach somewhere. Oh man, I've been to like 400 Grateful Dead shows.
Your Bill Walton impression is the worst impression I've ever heard.
What he's more like, he's more kind of like a little more like this. Yeah, like, sorry. So it's more like Larry. Well, this is Bill Walton like high. So I think his voice goes up a few octaves like Larry. Larry. It just becomes like an old grandma. Yeah, I don't know.
Walton's just high in life at this point.
I think Bill Walton's just always just high. He probably just like, he definitely like takes like edible, like I'm not like trying to turn this into like a weed podcast, but he definitely eats like edibles before like a basketball game, before like an announce, before he has to like go announce.
I don't know, maybe.
He shoves them in those fucking like Hawaiian shirts he wears and he just like eats like, yeah, like pot gummy bears as he talks about basketball. So I don't know. Do you have anything more to say about whatever? Anything? Life? I mean, we'll get to Thrones in a second, but anything football related?
No, I mean, you know, we're just kind of at a point where spring football's over. We're kind of in the dog days of summer when it comes to, you know, college football.
Yeah, especially if TCU just kind of like, you know, kind of just slowly trickles out. You know, last year the baseball team and like the reason I'm not like that, like... Obviously, want them to win the national championship, but
all the time, every
all the time. But you know, at the same time, it's just like last year felt with all those seniors with Preston Morrison.
It just felt like the year.
We go through this list all the time, right? Yeah. Like Riley Farrell, it's just like they just couldn't really like find like the rhythm on offense they needed to when they really needed to. And but aside from that, I mean, they could have. If they would have beat Vanderbilt, they probably would have won the World Series. And just the same as they would have beat Virginia the year before in that game, and gone to the winners or further down the winners bracket, they probably could have won. So yeah, I mean, just when you have guys that are seniors and you're never going to see those guys play again, it's just like, all right, this is it for at least, you know, 2 years or something before this can kind of sort of happen again. And when it's guys you've been following for 4 years, Preston Morrison was a starting pitcher for literally 4 years, and to see those guys go out at least they made the World Series, and at least, you know, they didn't, like, it would have been really awful if you know, the NC State game would have gone the way it would have gone, or, you know,
they, I think A&M would have hurt a lot worse.
Yeah, the A&M game, losing at home after that whole shit with the TCU 15, and so going, you know, at the end, you know, at the end of the day, like, that, you know, that was a nice result, going to getting to Omaha and doing all that. But, you know, with this team, as young as it is, you just, like, a super regional would just be great. Like, all right, this is the taste. You know, the expectations are a lot higher next year, and, you know, the next two, you know, 3 years after that. So, yeah. So, you know, like I said, like, I'm not, like, losing my hair about TCU baseball as I was last year. I don't think anybody else, that's not to say I'm, like, less passionate. I just, like, know that this team's, like, really young, and, like, next year is going to be really awesome. So,
yeah.
And I'm excited for some new faces in football. And I'm just excited for college football in general. I'm excited for Arkansas to come early. We can start just, like, the Bulema Patterson stuff again. So,
yeah.
All in all, it's just
good stuff on the horizon.
Good stuff, for sure. You know,
lovely fifth stuff. Year is kind of the second generation of TCU's Big 12 / power conference, because we'll see how long the Big 12 lasts. But
lovely stuff, for sure. I don't know. Speaking of things I like, familiar faces and kind of transitions, I don't know. Did you like last night's episode of Game of Thrones? It's probably the first one we haven't watched together in a while. But
yeah, well, we didn't watch last week. I was,
that's right,
I was,
you were gone, you were gone, so we haven't watched two.
You were Clayton's, yeah. But yeah, it was
Richards, please.
Oh, Richards, sorry. It was a good episode. Some people I've heard are not huge into this season so far. Personally,
that's weird. As a season, like, I think that's really weird, because I thought last year was, like, not that good.
Yeah, I really didn't like last season either. But
watching with our old roommate, someone who already didn't like the show, watching last season, like,
that's true.
Was definitely like watching, like, somebody just, like, almost, like, explode.
Yeah, it was.
Thank God, like, Mad Men was still in the air, and we could follow it up with watching that.
Thank God, Hard Home happened.
Thank God, Hard Home happened, or else he would have, like, broken the TV.
Yeah,
and so would I. Like, I thought, like, you know. And it's, a lot of this stuff is important now, but, like, just, like,
you know. This one feels more like a vintage Game of Thrones season to me, because there's a lot, it just feels like there's a lot of just kind of political stuff, and you're getting more,
right, this feels like kind of like families. Kind of like a mix of, like, the second, third, and fourth, yeah. Kind of like where you had,
but it's clearly building all
the, like,
up
the tactician to, like, the tactician stuff with, like, with, you know, Rob had in season two, and Stannis, and kind of these, like, warring kings, and now you have, like, similar stuff, but, like, it's, and speaking of passing the torch, this is, you know, a nice kind of parallel to it. Yeah, I mean, in these, you know, the second season, the third season even, like, you have all these, like, these essentially, like, old men making, like, these decisions, and now it's, like, their children, their daughters, their sons,
yeah.
They're passing the baton to them, you know, whether it's because their son stabbed him in, you know, the stomach, or because, did you start it?
Yeah.
All right, so we're back. Yeah.
We're back.
But we're saying, like, yeah, it's just, like, passing down the baton to, you know, sons, daughters, you know, Sansa, like, saw, you know, lived with the maniac that ended up stabbing his father. And once they kind of put it together, when he says, you know, since Jon and the Night's Watch the letters, it's like, hey, we're coming. He says, Warden of the North, and something else that made Sansa be like, all right, this dude killed his father. Like, this guy's a psycho. He has to be dealt with. And while John's, like, emo pouting, it's like, Sansa's like, this is not how, like, shit gets done. This is not how.
This is not the world we live
this
in.
This is not the world we live in. This is not, like, what you do to Ramsay Bolton. It's like, if you want to live, if you want to, like, you know, ever see Rickon again, if you ever just, like, ever want to get back to normal, like, you can't, like, sit and pout like you're, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. But, so, yeah, even this, the Littlefinger stuff and, you know, the Moondor kid, little Aaron, Robin Aaron, like, that stuff's the same thing. It's like, all right, he's like, you know, tricky. He's like, you know, Littlefinger calling the shots. He's like, all right, we're going to go help Sansa. Like, hey, you know, Hawk boy, like, can we get some troops? Can we get some troops over here? He's like, yeah, fine. No, she's my cousin. Fine. You know? All right, now go, yeah, smoke weed with Bill Walton, and I'm going to get all these troops together. And yeah, to see everything come together, it's just going to be the biggest, like, tease ever if all these, like, these war, like, you know, they basically, like, gear up for war, and they kind of, like, do, like, a Braveheart kind of, like, face-off, and then, like, the White Walkers just, like, screw it up.
Yeah.
And, like, wipe out the Boltons and wipe out. And honestly, that's probably kind of what we're leaning towards, is, like, they kind of get ready to, like, to do, like, this kind of, like, stare down, like Braveheart or Gladiator, any movie.
And then White Walkers come.
And then they just tear, like, both of them equally, and people like John make it out. Sansa, who I said was going to be kind of sort of like a general or something this year, and you know, Ramsay will probably meet his end during that assuming battle, and that will kind of set up.
I think Sansa's going to kill Ramsay.
That would be awesome. Like, I would love that to happen and just like cut his head off or something. But you know, so yeah, I think that'll set up the final two seasons, or I guess three. Technically, but they're going to divide up the last... they're only doing two more, I think. I couldn't remember if it's one more full season and then two halves, but I think it's two halves. So, after the season, the 15 sort episodes
a,
that
a
were...
A Mad Men type of...
Yeah, this is the 15 episodes that remain, kind of saving all that CGI and killing off a certain amount of direwolves to conserve like CGI usage, is going to be really interesting when you're just going to have like 14, 15 episodes of zombies carnage. Battling dragons, right?
And, yeah.
You know, last night, like, Daenerys, like, all right. Which is, it's good. Like, I mean, her things, plot is a little cyclical, I feel like. But yeah, to get out of that Dothraki little, you know, Ibiza kind of, like, rave scene is good. So it's good to, you know, have some momentum her way, get the dragons back. And kind of make moves finally to go west, because it's been like six years.
And excuse the pun, but I think that episode kind of reignited her storyline.
Yeah, it was definitely dragging. It's like, obviously, like I've said this a few times, and I've said this in person many times, I haven't like been that into her storyline since like Karth, which was season two. And That was the summer before TCU even like went to the Big 12. So I haven't even like really been interested in her plot line since TCU like played a down of football in the Big 12. So
yeah,
I don't know what else. I don't know what else you got. And stay tuned. We say we are gonna have guests, but I think these next 2 weeks we actually should have some people calling us in, talking Thrones, talking college football, maybe even talking some baseball punches. So
yeah,
I don't know.
We'll see.
What else you got?
I don't know. I just wonder, who's going to be the major character to die this year? Because they're, you know.
I don't know. Maybe it's this the year that nobody dies, because everybody remaining is pretty important. Pretty important. Like, Bran has to stay alive at least until like next season. Arya will stay alive. Jon will. Hopefully Sansa stays alive. Maybe some bad guys. It's like maybe it's a turn of some bad people get some bad people get kind of their turn to get kind of like knocked in the mouth, because the next two seasons people probably will die because they're battling like people who aren't even human. So stay tuned for that. And
I have a bad feeling about Tormund.
Yeah, I don't know. Although him in the little nice little rom com between him and Brienne would be pretty nice. I'd watch like you've got Raven instead of You Got Mail.
Yeah.
You've got Raven. It's good. It's fresh. Another thing that people don't even really... God, even You Got Mail is an extremely outdated movie.
Yeah.
Oof. Now it would just be like, you got a, I don't know, a distasteful picture on scrolled. Snapchat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You got dick pic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would watch that. I would watch that sequel. Just I don't
you
know.
You got dick pic,
or just you got Snapchatted by like Tom Cruise, like or sorry, Tom Hanks, like I don't know, doing face swaps with I don't know, is you know stack of pancakes or something. But I guess then you would have to be like if they like break up and now they have to like they're kind of rekindling their love via Snapchat and I don't know. Yeah, you got dick pic. That's the one. That's because it's the final like threshold of the relationship.
That'll be right up there with Mighty Ducks 4 where.
They're all like alcoholic drug addicts.
Goldberg dies.
Yeah. They're all in like Vancouver. Yeah. I don't know. Goldberg. Yeah, exactly. It starts at like Goldberg's funeral.
Opening scene is Goldberg's funeral. I still want to make that movie just to shoot that scene.
And honestly, Goldberg's a crap goalie. So, it's kind of time for him to.
I want Charlie to be the coach, but I want him to have like had a brief minor league stint and he flamed out.
Oh, he's
and
never
got, in, got into drugs and alcohol and. Now he's in rehab.
Honestly, that's kind of the plot of the first one.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's full circle.
Like the alcohol, the alcoholism is definitely there, but there's definitely some other like stuff that's definitely implied.
Yeah, but here's the twist. the kid who's like the star player on the team that he's coaching is the bastard son of his mom and Coach Bombay.
He would have known if his mom like would have had a kid.
Well, I don't know.
It's like these not Charlie's mom's like Gordon Bombay and Charlie's mom like aren't gonna give a kid up for adoption. Like maybe like a bastard like his own son. Like, hey, you kind of look like me.
I don't know.
All right. Probably like there's good enough place I need to end for the week. Like we said, stay tuned. You know, for some call-ins next week for Thrones basketball or football.
Hopefully basketball. Hopefully we get good news
maybe
tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe basketball. And yeah, anything that really gets thrown our way because I don't know. It's, you know, the Big 12, you could say, is a little bit like Game of Thrones. You just every week you're a bit on your toes. Like, will it survive? Will it not?
Yeah. I don't know.
Are they going to put some more people on the show? Are we going to get rid of people? Or is the show just going to, you know, dissolve and spread into other shows? So, I don't know. So, stay tuned for that. We'll go back to Parliament. I don't know. Do you have anything else?
No. I am square.
You're square. I am Marshall Weber. This has been the Frogs of War podcast. Oh, wait. I meant to do this at the very beginning. Shit. I should have. I'm sorry. I just want to give a quick shout out to the TCU hockey team, which I think we've had like friends that have played on that mm-hmm. club hockey team. I love club sports. I love club sports so much that I played on an intramural baseball team and we won the championship. And they still, I don't think, have intramural softball anymore because they, after we won it.
You played on softball, not baseball.
Intramural softball. Beer league softball that wasn't supposed to be beer league. Probably the reason why they didn't have it anymore.
Probably also the reason you won.
Probably also the reason we won because we were... You know,
loose swings.
It was very major league. Free swing. I was the catcher, so I felt very like Jake, very much like Jake Taylor out there. Anyway, so the TCU hockey team.
Wild Thing Goo Wilson.
Goo would be more like, I don't know, not Wild Thing. Goo would be.
He'd be the old guy. What's his name? The
Lou?
No. The lefty.
Not Dorn. Oh, that would be like, no.
Like Tim.
That would be like Tim. Just a crotchety old just.
Goo would be Dorn.
Goo is Dorn. Goo complains enough to be Roger Dorn. He doesn't necessarily have like the lavish lifestyle that Roger Dorn has. Thank you for listening, by the way, Goo. Shout out. Anyway. But he's definitely Dorn-esque, I think. Anyway. Are you Rick Vaughn? Are you going to sleep with his wife?
I wasn't on the team.
When he's like, I had no idea. I know.
I wasn't invited.
You should have been on the team.
Nobody
but
invited me.
We still won. But anyway, they like, I think pretty much like banned, you know, intramural softball after that. Because A, they didn't like seeing
anything
us.
Anything we succeeded
exactly. At. Anything they didn't really like seeing like our group of clowns win anything. But obviously like the implicit, or not implicit, but like the, I don't know. I just think it promotes... If you play an intramural softball in college, there's definitely like a beer aspect to it. And when you're coming out, just like drinking Miller Lite tall boys and smoking cigarettes and pretending like you're carrying powers, like versus guys who are in like, you know, basically like uniformic across the board, basically look like that Hard at Home episode where they all got like their snow camo on. They're all like matching. And you're playing like guys who, yeah, like have like cigarettes dangling out of their mouth and like win championships. Like obviously you gotta bear it. But how we're getting to that is TCU Hockey, find them on Twitter. I'll look up their Twitter right now. But basically they're having a some people expressed some interest in wanting to know where they could find their merchandise. I like hockey uniforms. I think they look really sharp. Hockey jerseys.
Their jerseys are actually pretty cool.
They have two really cool ones. Yeah. A purple one and a white one, I think. And they're both real, real sharp. And I told them I'd do this. You can just find them at TCU Hockey. Apparently their jerseys are shipping soon. So hopefully they have some more. And definitely support the team because this team isn't funded by our tuition or our, you know, paycheck that goes to giving back money to football and basketball and all that. So that money doesn't go to them. This is purely that's why they call it a club sport. So
their team pretty much got me through one of my classes too, because that was the only team I would cover when I was working for TCU 360.
And, you know, a bunch of good guys over there. So do them a favor. If you haven't bought anything, if you know anybody that likes hockey or you want to get into hockey, or I'm trying to get into hockey for one, you know, I have to become learned. learn about the Anaheim Ducks. I don't know, maybe to impress people.
I don't care that much.
It's
fun when you're there. Yeah, I mean, oh, definitely. The energy at a hockey game is insane. But yeah. TV,
I just try to get in hockey to impress women. I'll keep you updated on that. Yeah. But anyway, support your hockey, support your TCU. Find them on at TCU Hockey.
Buy some cool hockey jerseys. They're warm in the winter.
On Twitter. Exactly. Great way to keep warm. Great gift for a loved one. Support them. And now that I think is all we got. So see you back next week for Thrones. Always probably like going to talk Major League or some stupid stuff like we always end up talking about. But if you made it this far, thank you again, because we couldn't do it without you. I mean, we could, but it would just be a lot sadder. This is Parliament. I've been Marshall Weber.
A man has one name.
I like that you're ending it on that. Anyway, we'll see you next week, hopefully with some guests, talking football and such. So, see ya. That's your phone. Peace.